This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
The conventional wisdom that everything that Al Gore says and everything David Suzuki writes about global warming and climate change is absolutely accurate and believable. Now, I'm not an expert in this area. I'm just a journalist. But unlike so many other people in media, I don't lie about it. I don't pretend that because I've read a book or two, I know everything about the science of global warming. Increasingly, though, I do doubt what I'm hearing from people who are alleged to be experts. So what you will hear is someone who is an expert speaking for an hour on Canadian television about his views on global warming and climate change. He will make this point. I'll make it now as well. Don't believe anything. Do your own work and research. You then may conclude, you know what, David Suzuki,
he is just another human being who gets it wrong sometimes.
Science is a difficult discipline not only to take up, but also to understand. The language of science is very jargon-heavy, with science papers often requiring mountains of prior knowledge in order to fully comprehend. It takes time and energy to study science, time and energy that most people simply don't have to spend. This is why science reporting is a crucial practice of journalism. But ask any scientist and they will tell you that they think there should be better science communication in mainstream media. While we have dedicated science journalists, such as Peter Hatfield or Robin Williams, who excellently communicate science on a public platform, hard news reporters, the kind the majority of people will see on popular news channels, tend to have more reach to a wider audience and, unfortunately, much less refined interpretive skills when covering science stories. And science stories end up in the mainstream news quite a bit.
Well, a mysterious NASA press release sparking major attention. They're holding a press conference this time tomorrow afternoon to announce, quote, an astrobiological finding that will impact the search for evidence of extraterrestrial life.
That's Megyn Kelly of Fox News in 2010 during the internet debacle that had a sizable number of people presuming that NASA had discovered aliens. This news event is a good example of how sensationalism in the news media can misinform the public on science. The person at NASA who wrote the press release casually mentioned that a discovery to be announced at an upcoming news conference could have impacts on the search for extraterrestrial life. In reality, the discovery in question was of microbes on Earth exposed to an arsenic-rich environment for multiple generations which had evolved to incorporate arsenic into its DNA structure. The angle on extraterrestrial life was an interpretation, not a conclusion, of the discovery. Yet the writer of the press release decided to include extraterrestrial life for some reason. And instead of waiting for the embargo on the story to pass, The Sun and The Daily Mail published early, pushing hard on the aliens angle. The word aliens is guaranteed to get attention, so of course aliens became the focus of the news cycle. In the meantime, many people were, let's say, extremely confused.
Let's talk about what this all means. A lot of people painting this as, you know, aliens. Is E.T. going to be in my backyard when I get home tonight?
And no, we should not have gotten those so excited. No, we should have understood that E.T. wasn't phoning home.
Science is not usually sensational, and sensationalism can end up muddying the information that comes from science. There's a very simple way that this can be avoided. I spoke with Nobel Prize laureate Peter Doherty, who has written several books explaining science to a layman audience.
The challenge is to get across to a broader public the idea that evidence is at the basis of science, and that the views that we express as scientists are based in the best available evidence that we can access. Set against that, you often have a body of opinion, but opinion is not science.
Increasingly, though, I do doubt what I'm hearing from people who are alleged to be experts. So what you will hear is someone who is an expert speaking for an hour on Canadian television about his views on global warming and climate change. About his views on global warming and climate change. He will make this point. I'll make it now as well. Don't believe anything.
As someone interested in both science and journalism, it's been an illuminating experience for me going back and forth between these two disciplines. There's a great quote from Andrew Denton's interview of Peter Doherty, where after Doherty mentions that he initially tried to become a journalist, Denton remarks, "But you thought you'd tell the truth instead." I find this joke fascinating, since science and journalism are both concerned with truth.
So the job of the science journalist, the professional science journalist, is to look at the evidence. If there's evidence for and there's evidence against, then by all means it should be reported in a balanced way, depending on what the preponderance of evidence is. should really reflect the degree of balance. On the other hand, if the science-based view is based in evidence, but the opposition to that is not based in evidence, but in opinion or fear or something else, then you need to report it in that way. You can't give someone who's an outsider in the field, has no body of evidence to back them up, the same weighting as you give someone who's presenting the evidence-based view. I mean, that's the job of the science reporter, to actually make that balance. Now, if the science reporter deliberately goes out and looks for people who are opposed without necessarily having anything to back up their opposition that's published in decent journals and all the rest of it along the rules of science, then I think they're doing a profound disservice, and we see some of that sort of reporting.
The globalization of groupthink is guilefully disguised under the green fig leaf of pietistic environmentalism. From behind that fig leaf emerges today's tumescent totem of totalitarian tyranny, climate change.
The person you just heard was Lord Christopher Monckton. Lord Monckton has been a frustrating character for climate scientists, as he's a self-proposed expert on global warming.
And I think that by the end of this year, it's going to be more or less still online with that one, right at the bottom of his range of predictions. So temperature hasn't increased as much as Hansen told Congress it would. Therefore, this question arises, are today's temperatures, historically speaking, exceptional?
Unfortunately, Monckton is notorious to the scientific community for misrepresenting data. Monckton is one of the latest in a brief yet impactful history laid out in the book Merchants of Doubt, co-authored by Naomi Oreskes and Eric M. Conway. This is another challenge for the scientific community. Propaganda from people and organizations with political or economical stakes that can be threatened by scientific consensus aims to muddy the waters for both the public and the politicians they choose to represent them. In the book, Oreskes and Conway outline how groups such as tobacco corporations used ex-researcher scientists to muddy the waters on the issue of whether tobacco smoke caused lung cancer. Back in the 50s, scientists and tobacco corporations knew that smoking was a direct cause of lung cancer, but corporations and the scientists who worked for them insisted that they couldn't find any connection, and so delayed political action against tobacco smoking for 3 decades. Scientists doing the research all agreed that tobacco smoke was a carcinogen, but as long as there were some scientists saying the opposite, no one could claim that the scientific consensus was that smoking caused lung cancer. And the same is happening now with global warming. I spoke with James Hoggan, the founder of Dismog Blog, a blog dedicated to taking out the anti-science propaganda on climate change.
I mean, I've been astonished, I have to tell you, that over the years, watching 8-10 years ago, where you'd see these debates between legitimate climate scientists who essentially had all the evidence on their side, and groups that are essentially front groups of, you know, someone who may have a scientific background but doesn't really have any credentials in climate science and hasn't done any climate science. And you have, rather than the people who are unqualified losing the debate, the legitimate scientists struggle.
Now, the debate will be closely followed by climate change skeptics, including the former science advisor to Margaret Thatcher, Lord Christopher Monckton. He's in Australia on a month-long speaking tour, and he joins us now. Lord Monckton, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Virginia.
Normally, it's through getting someone who has some kind of science background to be the spokesperson.
Including the former science advisor to Margaret Thatcher, Lord Christopher Monckton.
And usually they are the spokesperson for a think tank or some kind of front group that's been put together to give the appearance of scientific legitimacy. And then that's used to make the case that the science, you know, depending on whatever it is they're saying, that, you know, the science isn't certain or climate change is a hoax. And it's usually done through essentially scientists from the research we've seen that really aren't doing any science and usually are not climate scientists, but they have scientific background and they work for think tanks usually with some kind of ideological culture and funding from the fossil fuel industry.
A problem for scientists in the realm of the news media is the issue of journalistic balance. It doesn't matter if Lord Monckton or whomever is deliberately misrepresenting data or trying to muddy the waters on what the scientific consensus is on an issue, reporters have to broadcast their opinions anyway for the sake of balance.
Only one network delivers fair, balanced, and accurate reporting. We report, you decide.
Host of The Science Show, Robin Williams, told the media last year that he won't broadcast the views of global warming deniers precisely because that side of the story is almost entirely manufactured. And this is a sentiment shared by the majority of scientists.
Well, everyone has the right to be skeptical. And basically, if someone is fundamentally ignorant, but they're skeptical, it doesn't make them dishonest. They just don't understand it. For instance, I had an article today published in The Conversation on our long history of infection with viruses. And I've had some comment come back saying that the fact that you can get chronic infections in some way disproves immunity and the need for vaccination. So it just shows a profound ignorance of how viruses, for instance, establish latency, how they can hide from the immune system, how they get copied back into the genome. So the person who is expressing what to them may be a very honest opinion simply doesn't understand anything. And so you can't really accuse that person of being dishonest. You can accuse them of being selective in where their curiosity goes. But if they're not trained in that context, if they're not trained to respect the value of evidence and to look for evidence and how to look for evidence, you can't really call them dishonest. And they are entitled to their opinion. Basically, I think Al Gore said it, or someone said it, we're entitled to our own opinions. We're not entitled to our own facts.
The news media is always looking for the other side of the story. And part of that is because of how good these groups are at messaging and the sort of political narrative, as opposed to scientists who are basically just trying to explain the data and what science is finding. And so you basically have something that's highly emotional and highly kind of ideological lining up against something that is just kind of boring facts about climate change. And so what you have with that is this, that you have the misinformation then just kind of overpowers the data, the shouting and the sort of ideological whipping up of a certain point of view overshadows the data. And it plays into the hands of the media that likes conflict and he said, she said.
Evidence is the cornerstone of science, and the onus is on journalists working in the hard news media to improve their standards of evidence when it comes to reporting on scientific issues. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.